Okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
Our destiny is greatness, people. Why?
Because God did it.
Come on with it.
Talk to him.
Hey, they can eat in the morning.
You know why they yawning, yawning.
Why they yawning, yawning, yawning.
Talk to him.
Come on, Eddie.
Get them out the way.
Come on.
Hey, God, where about that?
We loosen the full face.
Lathory.
It's happening. Colossal. Our destiny is greatness.
Talk to him.
Talk to him. Good morning. Woo!
That's right, baby. We are back. It is Who We Got Wednesday, and we are ready to go today. Say, see. That's right, baby. It is our last Who We Got Wednesday of the season, our second season finale, and we have a phenomenal guest for you this morning. What's going on with you, E? What's up, brother? How you doing?
What's happening? I'm feeling good. I'm all good, baby. Everything.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You are here.
Everything
baby.
Is in
time to go.
Divine order. And I'm ready to go.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So let's jump right on into it. E, who we got for Who We Got Wednesday?
Well, you got a simple answer to that question. This man has done a lot of things for a lot of people. But most importantly, right now he is the Philadelphia Police Commissioner. I want to introduce to some of you and present to others most of your police commissioner, those of our listeners who are from Philadelphia, Richard Ross Jr. Hello, Commissioner. How are you feeling this morning?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Very well. Good.
Very well. It's a pleasure to have you.
Oh, good.
My pleasure.
Oh yeah. So how's everything moving along? You feeling good this morning? How's it going?
Hey, he woke me up, brother. You know.
Talk about it.
Start, right? You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
So it's all good.
Oh yeah. That's great. Now, I have many friends who are police officers. Oddly. Including the police commissioner, his father. I know me and Nick are members of Triumph Baptist Church. I believe
Victory,
our commissioner.
Right? Victory.
Victory. Oh yeah.
There it is. There it is.
Yeah. And is it Unity? No. That's Sharon Baptist Church. I know you're a member of Enon.
Enon Tabernacle
right?
Baptist Church, my brother. Enon. That's right.
you guys don't have a word. There's no word. It's just
you know the word. It's all good. Yeah.
I know the word. the same word. Well, firstly, we'll take a second. We'll take a second in a minute to get to know you, Commissioner. But firstly, I want to say that every person in listening to the show right now. Is a big deal, and I want you all to know that you are a big deal, and we'll talk about why in just a second. See, the reason we live is to give life. It's the reason that we went to school. It's why we get up in the morning. It's why we sacrifice. Now, it's why the show exists. You know, it's why we do what we do. I want to be a big deal. In other words, I want to help people because it's only what you do for other people and what you do for Christ that will last. It's only what you do for others that make you a big deal. Now, it's guests like Cindy Bass and James Hall and Richard Ross Jr. that inspire us because you are a very, very big deal. This show is a big deal. So, Commissioner, how do community leaders, first of all, and guardians and role models across this great city and every great city, especially young role models like Nick and myself, best keep the number of quote-unquote missing blacks, those who have been eradicated from their communities by way of the grave or by way of the prison cell? How do we keep the number of missing blacks from increasing by incentivizing our at-risk citizens toward prosperity instead of prison, or for all intents and purposes of your position, danger?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing is, you already talked about it a couple times, with role models, is being there, whether you are a formal or informal mentor to people. And talking, when I say that, I'm talking about just ripping up young people, and anymore we're talking about young women as much as we're talking about young men, and showing them the way. And hopefully we've all had that and had that experience. I mean, first and foremost, I had that in my home with your two church members, Richard Ross and Virginia Ross, two of my biggest heroes. And, but even beyond that, having people in my neighborhood who showed you what it meant to be a man and or be a woman. And this is the things we have to turn around and do for our young people, because it's so critical to be a part of people's lives and to reach out and reach back. And that's what's important. You can't just live in your own little world and say it's just about me and I got mine. That's not how we're going to survive this. We got to keep moving forward by showing that we care about the people around us, showing them the way to do things. And I think that's most important. Make a difference in a young person's life, even if it's just in a small way. Show them that you're willing to mentor them in doing something that maybe you do well, or just the fact that you're willing to be a listening and an ear. And that's what's going to be critical, I think.
Nice. It's funny you say we can't just live in our own little world. It's funny you say little world, because if you live in your own world, then that's exactly what it is. It's a little world, because it's like my boy Nicholas Christian often says, you must be about something that's bigger than you, meaning
that's
something
right. That's
about all of us. Ubuntu, I am because we are.
Yes, sir. There you go, Ubuntu.
Oh yeah, my man Nelson Mandela. So let's take a step back really quick, and for those that want to get more of an inside picture or know a little more about their police commissioner, our citizens of Philadelphia, you know, a lot of times it's the small things that allow us to do the big things. I know you said, you know, your biggest role models, the members of Triumph Baptist Church, Richard Ross Jr. And his wife. Now, what? And I know that you're a member of Enon Tabernacle Baptist Church. We said that also. But what are some things? What makes the commissioner tick? What about you do people maybe not know, or do people need to know, that makes you get up in the morning to perform one of the toughest jobs that exists in one of the toughest cities?
Well, and that's a good question. So I think that and it's multifaceted. So first of all, and not to sound, you know, cliche-ish or throwing out
old mind,
but I really do like people, and I like to see them really do well. Like, I can sit and just have a conversation with you, either of you, and irrespective of what your goals or your hobbies are, I don't have to be into it, but when I feel that passion from you about them, I get interested in that, and I get interested in you, and I want to see people thrive. But even going back to my early development, watching my parents in particular, my dad, for example, is a serious role model of mine, because watching him do what he did for his three boys, watching him show how a man is supposed to be a man, getting up, doing what the men are supposed to do in their community, watching him be a vital and active part in trying to correct things. He even does it where he is now, and he's, you know, he's almost 78, and sometimes I want him to fall back a little bit. Like, you know, you've got to be out there so much, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, he ain't a young man no more to try to correct some of the ills. But, you know, he's just who he is. And sometimes it drives my mom crazy. But even her, you know, the type of person that would give you the shirt off her back, and always been that way. And I watched them in our neighborhood open up their doors to people sometimes who were in need. And that kind of cascades down to your children, and you take upon that mindset that it's not about you. And again, it goes to that notion that it's not what you say, it's what you do, that your kids sometimes will take more from than anything else. And so I think it starts there, and I have the benefit early on of watching other fathers who were critical and a critical part of their sons' or daughters' lives, and seeing that that's what you have to do for the development of young people. And then going forward in this job, having seen things that sometimes people should never have to see, and the trauma that young people witness, even when they're not directly involved, and that just impacts you in a way that I can't begin to describe. So a lot of things get me up in the morning that keep you going. This can be a frustrating occupation, as you well know. It is a tough, tough time for this profession.
Yes.
But you just want to keep moving and doing everything that you can and do your part to try to make it just a little bit better than the way you found it.
Yeah, you got to add value. You got to add value. That's one of the things that I often say as well. When you get your hands on something, whether it be your job or something new, you want to try to leave it better than it was when you first got it.
Absolutely.
That's one of the ways you add value. I think
it's amazing.
Perfect segue. Well, yeah, go ahead, E.
It's just amazing. I was just thinking how big of a head start it is to have such caring parents who really took up the job of guardian and role model. And we see that in hindsight, and I feel like that motivates us so much more to be that for those who don't have it.
You're absolutely
and,
right.
Yeah, especially in a city like this one. Go ahead, bro.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I think the question of what makes you tick is, I think, a perfect segue for my next question, because this kind of hits home for me as far as social justice and where we're headed as a country. The question I want to ask is around the minorities, which will be the majority by 2050, according to the Bureau Census of Statistics. And as it stands today, Latinos and African Americans represent over half of the population of those who are incarcerated, but they only represent a quarter of the total U.S. population. And so my question for you is what can we do within the communities, within the homes, as you just talked about, and the schools, as you prefaced earlier, to make an impact on these whopping statistics of African Americans and Latinos, really the minority, who seem to be dominating the prison system, yet only a fourth of representation within society?
Sure. So let me work backwards to forwards on this question. And what I mean by that is answering like the end part first, which is the criminal justice systems and the fact that it's fraught with issues. And I don't think anybody's going to deny that, you know, this disparate treatment within the criminal justice system with minorities. And so whether that be on the front end in terms of the amount of minorities that cannot get bail and as a result can't get released and add to the prison population and jail populations, to unfair treatment with regard to charging. And this is why you're seeing projects like the MacArthur Project in the Philadelphia area, where it's an intentional effort to reduce the incarceration rates in general. But also we work very hard in Philly PD with the schools to ensure that young children don't get charged unnecessarily with minor crimes and thus get put into the system. And so we have some very vibrant diversion programs that we're proud of where, you know, this is the last school year, last year, not this year, 50% fewer arrests for minor crimes than there was the year before because, you know, there were things where kids were getting in fights with each other and security people were intervening like they're supposed to, but then they were charging the kids. We can't have that kind of stuff. If you start a child off on the wrong path, by putting them in the system, it's just going to be a steady decline that's going to lead to nothing positive. So that's on the criminal justice system part. And obviously, we could talk for hours about that. But the other part of it, as you start earlier in life, and it's something that in our community, communities of color, we don't tend to like to talk about, but it's a reality, and that is we need to keep more fathers in the home. And I'm not getting into marriage. I mean, we all about that. But I'm just talking about right now from a practical standpoint, an earthly one, the fact that people need to stay in the lives of the young people that they help to procreate. And so at the end of the day, even if you're not together, even if you have child support issues, that child wants you in their life as guidance, support, love, and everything else. And when we walk away from our children, it has a dramatic impact on their lives. I can't tell you how many times I've had conversations with young men of color who are in the system who said that they believed if their fathers were in their lives, they would not have taken the path that they took. And so that, on top of that village concept that we've always talked about, and that
yeah.
people wrapping their arms around that whole community and understanding that it's not just, you know, Mrs. Jones' child, this person is part of this community, and that I have also a degree of responsibility to inject myself when I see things going wrong. And instead of turning a blind eye to it, it's so many components to this. And obviously you deal with poverty issues, and, you know, we've heard it said 100 times, so many kudos go to the single black mother. I mean, that it's not even funny. I mean, I don't even know how they've been able to do it and able to keep many of our families together. But we gotta task young men with playing their role. I mean, there are many who do, so I'm not trying to say that they don't. But for some who just seem to be missing it, or they're perpetuating the cycle of single-parent homes and not being a part of your child's life, that's got to stop. We got to really be willing to step up and say that this is not what's going to lend itself to any kind of positive outcome for our young people.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's so amazing how much is at risk with just that one factor. And it's amazing that you bring that up. I was thinking about the police force, and I was thinking about all of these policies and all of the criminal justice system and everything that we need to do systematically to change the incarceration rates for minorities. But you bring up fatherhood and fathers being in the home. And it's just so amazing that's really I do nothing that's as significant as what you do, but even in my work day by day, working with students that have mental disabilities or behavioral kids in private schools, most of the kids who need my services are kids who don't have a father in the home, and it's not so much that they have a learning disability, but they've just got a detention deficiency, and
right.
so much happens. Like you'll need services in school, and then you're at risk for crime, and it's just phenomenal how much of a difference that we don't see that it makes. So I mean, this is perfect place to go. On that topic. It's got to be like 20%. It's got to be like 15%. Of minorities that are in prison that actually have a father, who, if not less than that, I'm off the top of my head, it's key,
right?
It's most key.
And you guys know that, you know, these young boys and girls, because I'm not leaving the girls out. Look at the incident down in Delaware, you know, just a week ago with a young girl.
Yeah.
Life to fight. But we can't lose sight of that. But what I'm really saying, and you're getting it, is that even if circumstances have prevented you from being in the home, it didn't work out or whatever, but you got to be in your child's life. You just have to, because it's that love, support, guidance, and even discipline that they want and they need. And so if we do not acknowledge that and deal with that, it's some people think it's airing our dirty laundry within our culture, but everybody sees it, so who are we hiding from? And so you got to really deal with that and really continue to push the notion and foster the notion that this is vital for our success and our livelihood, and it's not going to happen any other way, in my estimation. You're going to deal with a lot of other symptoms that are equally critical, but if you start building that kind of foundation on quicksand, meaning the quicksand would be no father in the home, then you're just rolling the dice, in my estimation. So.
Yeah, and you know what, I think to add to that, and this is a point that you made in your first response, so the question was, you know, I think people have really, you know, it got rid of the value of the village. You know, people have kind of taken that village aspect out of the upbringing of a child. And I think that's a huge mistake. You know, I think it's
too.
A huge mistake. If I look back over my life, and I'm sure you could say this as well, our village was tremendous. And it was tremendous because of the diversity and the ability for us to voice how we were feeling and what we were going through with not just our parents, but our friends and, you know, people who are older than us but weren't necessarily adults, you know. And,
right.
And we were able to have those conversations and most times talk ourselves out of doing something stupid or making a big mistake that would affect our future. And so
right.
I think one of the problems now that we see with our adults and our leaders is that they don't need to listen in their mind. I mean, they've figured it out. No one can have worse times than them in their mind. But what we need to understand is that our children and our youth, they're dealing with things that no other generation has dealt with, like this plague of social network and cyberbullying and some of the problems that they deal with. But not by all means, I'm not saying that they are any bigger than anyone else's problems as a child, but they are different.
So they are. I mean, they're more complex, certainly.
Yeah, and so I believe that having that village allows that young adult and allows that child to be able to voice that problem and get an opinion and get instruction and get some kind of direction from other people outside of their parents who, in some cases, may seem to be always getting them in trouble or always, using the rod, where they need that friend or they need that role model or they need that person who, again, isn't an adult but is, you know, 16, 17, 18 years old or 21 years old, who can tell them, hey, listen, your mom is right. I get your point, but your mom is right. And that comes through the village, and that comes through families coming together and saying, listen, you're not my child, but I'm not going to let you ruin your life either.
You know what? You're absolutely right, and I'm glad you pointed that out because I've even had, and I won't mention who, but at least one of your church members had me talk to, you know, his son, not because he's not in his son's life, but sometimes you need somebody else, you know, just that you respect or with a different opinion. And even for me growing up with the parents that I had, sometimes it was the uncle that, well, did you consider this? Did you consider that? And that's that village that you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like I said, it's so key. It's so key when you're talking about raising the youth, I mean, of this time. Because, like I said, they're dealing with things that, I mean, the internet. I mean, when we were growing up, yeah, the internet was a thing, but it wasn't at your fingertips like it is now. I mean, it just makes addictions and accessibility so much better, you know. And that although it's exciting, it also provides problems. We're talking about change, and I want to get into the last question. We kind of prefaced it before we got on there, and you know, it talks about your experiences when there were policy changes made in training, and also in changes made in the investigations of police shootings. Now, I'm not necessarily saying you made these changes, but I understand that you were involved with these changes. And through these experiences, as we go through Black Lives Matter and as we go through an attempt to change the view of society and how we're treated, what are the things that we can do? And I know you've touched on the village and you touched on fathers, but what are the things that we can do as a community to continue to have an impact with the Black Lives Matter movement, but also continue to have an impact on what we value and what our people value as young adults and as youth and people of color?
So it's just my opinion that engagement is a big one. When I mean engagement, I mean, we always talk about police community engagement, but I think, look, the Black Lives Matter movement that you're alluding to, it's fine, and I think they have done a lot to garner attention to a very critical and important issue. But I think we've reached a point where now we need to have some serious dialogue with the entity, in this case, police and or the criminal justice system, sitting down at the table and talking about the issues that confront us both people of color in the community as it relates to how they deal with the police and vice versa. I, for example, read an article the other day that someone pointed out that, you know, President Obama said it's time to stop yelling. It's time to start sitting down. And I don't know if you saw the same thing. And at the end, it was a very powerful statement that he said. One of the groups of Black Lives Matter said to him, well, you know, we were yelling because we want to get people's attention. And he simply said, Yeah, but you're in the White House right now talking to the President of the United States. So I think you've gotten people's attention. Now is
beautiful.
The time to sit down and actually say, let's come to the table. Because at some point it ends up just sounding like yelling after you've gotten people's attention. And so are you really trying to make change, or you just have a platform? And so I want to believe that people want to impact change, because that's why you're doing it. And if you're unwilling to sit down with the entity that you have an issue with, then that same group, meaning in this case the police department, starts to wonder, are you really about change, or are you about something else? And so the bigger issue is about engagement. You have to get engaged with the group to make it better. You can't just rely on the criminal justice system to make itself better. So making that noise in the front is a great thing. But then you got to roll up your sleeves and say that I'm going to stay in this thing, and I'm going to be engaged in it. I'm going to demonstrate, but I'm going to work with this group. I'm not going to take up this cause where I'm just always fighting, because then all you end up with is people who get defensive, and they start to deflect, and that doesn't accomplish anything. I mean, we're all supposed to be of the same community. Whether police have the power and authority to enforce laws or not is irrelevant. What has to happen is you have to believe that your police department really wants to make this place better for everybody else. It's not perfect. We have imperfect people and who do imperfect things. But if you believe that the lion's share, and there are 680,000 police officers in this country, 6,100 in this city alone, this department, if you believe that the lion's share want to do what's best, then you have an obligation, even as a community person, to sit down and work with them. I hear too often now, the police are supposed to do this, the police are supposed to do that, and you're right. But there's an obligation in any relationship. If you have that symbiotic relationship, it has to be give and take. It can't just be you make everything right for me and I don't play a role in it at all, other than to scream at you. And so that doesn't even make sense on any level to me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's only two reasons that people yell. Okay, they yell because they're not being heard, or at least they feel like they're not being heard. And people yell because they're mad. All right, and the truth of the matter is that we're all mad. So, I mean, let's be honest here. Why are you yelling? You want attention. That's what it is. That's all it is. And I feel like that's the point that Black Lives Matter has reached, to where they're making complaints, and that's all they're doing. Nick and I said a few weeks ago that they, you know, they need to reverse the dialogue, and we need to speak to one another. We need to figure out how we can make change ourselves. That's very key. Nick, did you have something before?
I would echo your point too, and I think Barack Obama hit the nail on the head with this, because you know what, we've got their attention, you know, and I think, you know, quiet as it's kept, we've had it before. I don't think that they were killing us and putting us in jail at such an alarming rate because they didn't know that our lives mattered. I think that they probably were afraid that they mattered more than they should, and that by 2050 we would be the majority, and they needed to do something about it. But now that we've yelled, and now that we've gotten their attention, now what, right? I think President Obama said it best. When you sit down at the table, you need to be prepared. You can call meetings, and you can network, and you can get in front of people. Those things get you in the door. People say that your knowledge and what you know, it's not all about that. It's about who you know. But who you know gets you the job, but what you know keeps it. And now you've been petitioning for this position, and you've been petitioning for this attention, and now you have it. How do you keep it, and how do you make an impact? And that's what you're talking about, and that's what Barack Obama was saying as well.
Yeah, this has been an amazing punctuation to our second season. I'm going to give you an opportunity to give us any last words, Commissioner. I want to say thank you to our live listeners. They're going to be bidding us farewell. Our live listeners are done at 7 o'clock. Show's over. Jesus Christ, it's been an amazing finale. My man, Richard Ross, Jr., Commissioner of the Philadelphia Police Department, I want to thank you so very much. You, and I cannot forget to thank my man, Sergeant Derek Lyles, for helping us put this together. And the man who also helped to put it together, my man, Richard Ross, Sr. Love him.
Yes, my man, too. That's my man, too.
That's right. Derek Lyles and Richard Ross Sr. I love you guys. Thank you guys so much. Now, as we scoot on out of here, and as we scoot on out of here for 2 months until we come back for season 3 of Nick and Eric in the Morning, Philadelphia Police Commissioner, give us any last words that you have to send us packing, anything that maybe you wanted to say that you didn't get a chance to say this morning, or anything that's been on your mind lately, anything you want to share, anything that will help activate greatness into the Philadelphians, the people of this great city. Let us have it, my man.
First of all, thank you for having me. I appreciate that lively conversation. But I would say stay in the lives of a young person, not just the ones that you have, that you created, but also the ones in your community. But also work with your government and thin government like police to really make it better. Work with the intention of improving the quality of life of all those around us. And I think we will get to that point. If we continue to strive, I know I'm going to be out there. Our command is going to be out there. So we just appreciate you all, and thank you for all you're doing.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, well.
That's what it is. That's what it is. Go ahead, my man. Take us out.
Well, listen, if you didn't get anything from the show, stop listening. Just stop listening to the show. No, I'm just kidding. don't stop listening. There's more for you next season. Listen, it's been a great run. It's been a great another second season. 2 years, Nick and Eric in the Morning has existed. You won't believe this was created in a drop-top Mustang on the way to the beach in Miami. But now look at us. now look at us. And it's been a great ride.
Oh, yeah.
We're excited about what we're going to do for you next season and the growth. We're sorry for all our live listeners. But listen, Nick and Eric need this break. So y'all better go get some archive shows because we are, it's a bittersweet Wednesday. So listen, if you didn't get anything from this show, if you didn't get anything from this season, we are sorry. But we would like for you to remember this one thing. It is our destiny. It is your destiny. It is Eric's destiny. It is all of our destiny to be great. Yes, that's right. I said it. Our destiny is greatness. And it's not because of you. It's not because of me. It's not because of us. It is not because of E. Our destiny is greatness. Why, E? Come on, brother.
Because God did it.
That's right, baby. Our destiny is greatness because God did it. And for the last time this season, I'll holla. I'll holla, baby.
Holla, baby.
All right,
thank
have
you.
A good one, gentlemen.
Thank you, Richard Ross Jr. Love you, man.
You guys have a good one. All right, see you, man.
You too, sir. Thank you.